You're listening to the Melrose Place podcast, where we rewatch, recap, and analyze every episode of the hit 90s TV series, Melrose Place.
Dan Hill here.
And Jenny Hill.
Let's get started. Episode 16, Bye Bye Baby, air date January 2nd, 1995. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We're into the 95s.
Yep, great year.
What a great year. This one kicks off with Joe holding nanny auditions, and she's up to reject number 8.
And we see Brunhilde leaving the...
She's a freaking linebacker.
Yeah, that woman's got a lot.
I don't want her watching my kids.
So she's very disgruntled leaving Joe's apartment.
Yeah, what was said?
I don't know, but whatever it was, it looks like there was a line had been crossed. She was not happy.
Yeah, there was a difference in opinion there.
Jake is helping to conduct these interviews with Joe, and that's when he says, well, you know, I could watch the baby when you're away.
But Brunhilde, when she left, she slammed into Jake. Did you see that?
Oh, no, I didn't.
When she exits, she, like, gives Jake a fucking...
She was on the football team with Terry.
She shoulders him and he's like, whoa, what's that about?
My bad. I thought that Jake was in the interview process all along, but...
No, he was coming up. She was coming out.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
There's an altercation. And then he's like, Joe, I think you're being a little too picky.
And Joe's like, they're either too young or too old. And I just need somebody that can watch the baby while I'm away. And so she's kind of lamenting to him about all of this. And that's when he says, you know, I could watch the baby. She thinks this is an absolutely crazy suggestion.
No. I don't want Jake watching my laundry, let alone my baby.
And that's when they hear a disembodied voice from below going, hello, hello.
Is anyone there? Nanny here.
So that's the first red flag. She just stands outside and just starts yelling hello until someone comes out.
The only way she could get more stereotypical is if she had like white gloves on and like an umbrella.
And if she flew up the stairs with her umbrella.
She is a perfect British nanny.
Perfect ripoff of Mary Poppins.
Emily Baldwin at your service. Played by, her real name is Antoinette Byron.
Oh.
And she is known for All My Children, Baywatch, and an episode of Malcolm in the Middle.
Nice.
And even Jake says it. He's like, oh my God, it's Mary Poppins.
No, Joe says it.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so they're already smitten with this new nanny caller, and we get the opening credits.
Yeah, so that was our cold open. We then see our exterior shot of Melrose Place.
Ba-doo-doo.
We got those rollerbladers going through, guy with the briefcase. I think we've seen this actual shot before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the... like Danny Tanner walks past.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And a rollerblader.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. And so we're back into the interior of Joe's apartment, and she's interviewing this Mary Poppins wannabe.
And Emily has been of service to Lord and Lady Callings. And she's been tending their 3 children for several years.
For the past 3 years, I've been in London, and I was lured here by the endless summer that is LA. I've been working with Lord and Lady Callings, and I just couldn't have the heart to leave them, so I've been writing to the children.
The children.
Every day for the past few weeks. I really become part of the family.
So she went... from Lord and Lady Callings to answering what is most likely a newspaper ad in the Sunday Post for a nanny at Melrose Place. Call Joe Reynolds.
Yeah. That's a fall from grace.
Yeah, let me tell you, we got people in the nanny industry, and if you're like a high-tiered nanny, you're going to stay a high-tiered nanny based on your references. You don't need to go babysitter status.
Like bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. With photographer Joe Reynolds. It's not a great step up the ladder.
Now, Joe is very impressed by her references, and she really gets to see the nanny in action because the little baby is crying, and Emily promptly gets up, picks the baby up.
She goes, oh, may
and,
I?
May I? And holds him close to her chest and rocks him. It eases the baby because of the heartbeat. It yes. reminds him of being in the womb.
It's the heartbeat. Brings him back to the womb.
She asks.
Immediately. This is all Joe needs to see. Yes. She's like, oh, what?
This is it. This
wow.
is done.
You're really great at picking up a child and making it stop crying. Would you like a job?
What's the baby's name?
And she's like, I was just going to pick it when I felt it.
Still thinking about it. Now, and this baby's like, over a month old.
Yeah, this baby's name is Michael Jr., a.k.a. MJ. All right? I'm not going to let y'all rename him again. It's MJ.
Well, this is something that the nanny kind of agrees with Joe about. She says that, oh, yes, a name represents history and where you're going. I understand that you have to wait until it strikes your fancy.
And then Joe's like, well, we want to remain invisible. So, I don't know.
How does that have anything to do with the name?
How about the Invisible Man? How about H.G. Wells?
The nanny says, well, coming from London, discretion is my middle name.
And then she looks at Joe and she's like, sometimes we need to tend to the mother as well. Come on, let's get you breakfast. She's like, perfect.
So Joe is totally sold. She offers her the job, and it looks like they're going to be one big happy family living in the under the roof of Melrose Place.
And how Joe can afford this, I'm not sure. Because I'm sure Lord and Lady Callings were paying quite a dime. For Emily's services. So let's sweep on over to D&D. Amanda, she rolls up to her office to find some bitch on her phone, on her computer, and at her desk.
Now, this is reminiscent of last episode where we had Bruce's sister just hanging out in her office.
Yeah, these people are just in there.
You know?
I would be furious as well.
I mean, maybe her secretary needs to be nominated for Bitch of the Week for continuing to let strangers in her office.
Maybe. And I mean, the last episode was Christmas. This one is January 2nd. Not much time has passed. Amanda's back to being a bitch after she was already...
absolved of her bitchiness. She's ready to turn over a new leaf and be a nice person.
But all it took was somebody on her phone, and she's like, excuse me, what's going on here? And it's Caitlin Mills, an efficiency expert, played by none of... The second I saw her, I was like, it's Whitley! I don't know if you all like... A Different World, but it was very much a part of my life back in the day. The spinoff of The Cosby Show. Hmm. Do you remember it?
I don't.
It's a different
world. I know what it is, but I just didn't really watch
where
it.
Where you coming from? Like, the Cosbys had a kid who wasn't their kid who was living with them.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to Hillman. I think it's Hillman. That's where Cliff Huxtable like always talked about going to.
Hmm.
So she goes, or Denise went, or somebody went to Hillman, and then that spun off A Different World. It was them at college.
Got it.
So, Jasmine Guy, she is known for A Different World, Fame, and she was in Vampire Diaries.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, she lets Amanda know that her and Peter have a history. They have worked together in Chicago before, and she is there at his behest. And in fact, she's talking to Peter on the phone at that very moment. Mm-hmm. So she puts him on speakerphone so he can kind of allay Amanda's fears about this mystery woman in her office.
And she was, Caitlin is prepared for all of Amanda's bitchiness. She's like, she gets her on one note. She gets her on the other note. And then she's like, all right, well, we're going to talk to Peter about this. She's like, I'm glad you fucking said that. Because, doop.
I got him on the phone right now.
Yeah. And then she's like, anything else? Any other questions, comments, or concerns? I'm going to still hang out at your desk, ho.
Yeah, she really dishes everything that Amanda serves her right back into her face.
And Peter... Yeah, Peter's, God damn it, I hate Peter. He's on the speakerphone, like, practicing his golf swing, and he's just like, oh, yeah, hired her.
What does he do at the freaking hospital?
Nothing. He doesn't do shit.
Like, it's like all he cares about is seriously, like making sure that D&D runs the world.
He's done two surgeries. He's fired Michael twice. That's it. Goes to a lot of dinners.
He just like sits at his chair and like looks through kaleidoscopes or tries to practice golf.
Yeah, they need a lesson in like giving. In the acting world, it's called like business.
Yeah.
They don't have any business for
all of his business for Peter. Is the most douchey shit in the world.
It's like, make a paper football and just like flick it. Can you spin around in your chair a little bit? And play golf, and then like just look out your window. I don't know. God damn, we got it. We have to start the shot at Peter's office. For fuck's sake! All right, have him zip up his pants. Whatever. just give him something and get him talking. So he's hired her, and Amanda's just basically got to eat it.
Right.
She's fucked.
Now, next up, we are at Twin Oaks. And this is the last day, guys. They have gone through the rehab program. They're sober. And both Allison and Terry are leaving after a 28-day stay.
Do you think it's a metaphor that Allison is wearing black and white prison stripes in this scene?
I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
She's breaking out of prison.
She's a prisoner of Twin Oaks.
I got a more nautical vibe from her.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's funny because they have this conversation where they're saying their goodbyes. And it's
weird goodbyes.
Yeah, Allison is like, you know, I'm really going to miss you, Terry. We hold a mirror up to each other. We're like the same person.
Sometimes I don't think we even have to speak.
What? This is the same guy that was manhandling you and, like, literally... 3 weeks ago, being like, you're lucky I didn't rape you in your sleep.
Maybe this is where Justin Timberlake got his inspiration for the song Mirror.
It's like you're a mirror. Oh.
Only you're staring back at me.
It's got to be this episode.
I can't see any clearer in your space, and now you're home.
Wow.
Yeah. So when Allison looks in the mirror, she sees a 6'7" aggressive sex addict who plays athletic sports.
So it's really funny because we always find Allison in these weird love triangles. So, of course, the person coming to pick her up from rehab is Billy, and Terry... He walks her out, and there's Billy waiting there for her.
He gives her his home phone number.
Oh, yeah.
And he has to specify, like, here's my home phone number. Yeah.
Terry's like, call me whenever you want.
Anytime. Anytime.
So Terry jumps into a limo where he has a driver waiting for him. And then Allison is reunited with Billy and...
Did you say they make out first?
Oh, I forgot that part. I'm sorry.
He's like, hey, let me grab your bags. And he like, they like leans over really weird to get the bags like all up in her space. And then he like nearly gets the bags and then like, they just fucking make out. And then afterwards, like she walks away and Terry's face is like, I still got it. And then Billy is outside, yeah, like sitting on the car to pick her up. Like,
and that, hey, hey guys.
Hi, did you like your rehab?
Was your rehab fun? Did you learn things about each other? Do you have a new name for yourself? Should I keep calling you Allison?
So they're off. He even Billy makes a comment like, oh, wow. So did you and Terry get close? Well, if you spend 28 days straight with somebody, you're bound to get to know them really well.
Yeah, you get very close. I washed 3,000 dishes with him. And he was close enough to yank my arm away from my Christmas fucking dinner. And I was basically a prisoner of his. He rubbed my face into the pouring water. He sat in my bedroom every single night. And he beat me repeatedly.
I shouldn't be laughing about this because it's not funny, but that's a very accurate depiction of what rehab was for Allison.
And then his twin brother, Jerry, took turns raping me, and I had to apologize.
Oh, no. That didn't happen. Okay, so we go to Wilshire Memorial. And we have Miss Amanda Woodward coming in to give Peter a piece of her mind.
How dare you? How dare you, Peter? Who is this woman?
And Peter's like, it had to be done. Oh, by the way, can you wear a black dress tonight? Because we're going to a party.
The one with the cutoffs. I want to show you out off. I want you to be brilliant. I want you to be beautiful.
My man goes to so many dinners and parties. So many. And then, like, this sends Amanda off on into another world. She doesn't even care about Caitlin anymore. She's just like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll wear that black dress.
And then that's when we get another barge in from Michael.
And he's like, hey, what the hell, man? I've been off OR duty for, like, 3 days. And then Peter is like, get out. I am in a meeting.
Well, Michael's really upset because seems like he keeps, because Peter keeps taking him off of the surgeries in the OR. And Michael's like, well, at least you're consistent. You keep taking me off. What kind of a message does this send? The residents are getting more hours than me.
And Peter says, it's simple, Mancini. I don't like you. Now get out. I'm in a meeting.
You're putting patients at risk. Well, you call it negligence. I call it management. So Mancini does storm out. And then Amanda says, well, I'm going to leave when he comes in. And then Peter is like, no, I'm not finished with you. Mm. If anybody talked to me that way, I would be like, deuces.
I'm not finished.
Don't with ever you, call me again.
You don't say that to Peter.
But she sticks around. And then that's when, after Michael leaves, Peter has more of an opportunity to berate her about talking him into rehiring Michael.
Oh, right. Yeah, he's like, why the hell did I do that?
And then Amanda says, well, there was a time, Peter, that you couldn't say no to me. And then he just gives her a smirk and says, I can now. Ew!
That's, like, I'm over you, huh?
That's like breakup grounds.
Like, I am over it.
That's like, okay, well, why don't you, like, I'm saying no to this relationship. Bye.
She can't. She has to take it from Peter because it's her boss. And he's even more so her boss because now he has an efficiency expert on her ass. And she's gonna see all the personal phone calls on that celly of hers.
Oh, God.
That happen at work. So let's shoot over to back to Melrose Place, where there's a welcome home Allison party.
Right. And the first thing we both noticed was everybody is drinking for what we thought was champagne. But then Billy takes, he makes it known that Oh, Allison, this isn't just champagne. This is actually apple cider sparkling. It tastes just the same.
No, it doesn't.
Billy, have you ever had champagne before? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it definitely does not taste like champagne. Matt offers this, like, mega toast, and Sydney is in the background, like, making, like, Allison drunk jokes. And she's like, Sydney's like, I'm jealous. I wasn't invited. And, I forget what drunk joke she made about Allison, but she throws shade.
She does. And Jane gives Allison a present. It's like some kind of shirt or dress or something. And then Sydney makes a point to say, well, leave it to Jane to get a great sobriety present.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's like, congratulations, Allison. Guess I won't be seeing you at Shooters anymore.
Yeah. And then Allison has kind of had enough of all of this. She hasn't had the opportunity to unpack. She's been gone for about a month. So she's going to go turn in.
She blows off her own party.
Yeah, she's like, well, bye.
I'm really tired and I have a lot of bills to pay. What?
How does that have any bearing on having fun with your friends?
She had a month of bills just stacked up?
I guess so.
Shouldn't you get, like, mail forwarding?
She wasn't taking care of them, I guess.
Sort that out? Yeah, it's kind of irresponsible.
I guess not. But then she goes into her apartment, and then she does her old turn off the lights and look out the window trick that she's done several times.
And then immediately everyone's like, hey, throw me a beer. Yeah. Yep. You need a beer?
I
need
a beer. Hey, leaves.
Throw me a beer, man. Hey.
Everyone breaks out the alcohol.
Hey, can I get a beer, too? Hey, thank you. Thank you.
She's like standing behind the slats of the blinds, like.
And then even in the background noise, I heard, here's the rehab. Cheers and rehab. And when Sydney left, she's like, have fun, everyone. I actually have to work for a living. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I did. But I was like, okay, so everyone else has a job, too.
Yeah. Relax, Sydney.
Okay.
So now we're off to Peter and Amanda's dinner. This was one of the most, like, hardest...
to understand little storylines?
Yeah. There was a lot of detail of, like, what was going on. It's very, like, Palmer Woodward episode where, like, you had to, like, follow the money and, like, what was going on.
No, I completely agree with you. So this is after they've had dinner. They're kind of congregated in the lobby. And they're just kind of talking, and they're talking.
Apparently, they're like one of them was also an efficiency expert,
right?
And Amanda's like talk shit about him, and she's like, "Oh yeah," and then the guy calls her Amanda. He's like, "Whoa, you're very beautiful, Amanda. Thanks for coming."
I did not get.
Fucking Amanda. I wrote it down. Calls her Amanda.
So apparently they slip Peter a little envelope that Amanda thinks is weird.
It doesn't make sense because he's talking about Amanda and he's like, gorgeous, smart, and charming. And then gives him an envelope.
Yeah, and then I was like, okay, this is where this is going.
Sex trade.
Peter is like grooming her to be a high-end call girl, and he's going to be trading her for like money. Yeah. I don't know.
And her call girl name is Amanda.
A night with Amanda is
$6,000. One night with Amanda, please. Is she free Thursday? Yeah, he gets an envelope, and Amanda's like, that's strange.
Yeah, so she thinks it's weird, but she does say, like, they ask her, well, Amanda, what do you do? And she says, I am one of the top ad execs in L.A.
But I guess you could, for tonight, I'm Peter's girlfriend.
And it's like, Dan, if someone asked you what you did for a living, would you be like, I am one of the top client services managers at a prop house. Yeah, like, would you say that? No.
I'd be like, I work in sales.
Yeah, like.
And if you want to inquire further, I'd be like, film props, costumes.
Yeah, I mean, like.
We sell those to collect.
I am the top ad exec of LA.
It's always an interview with Amanda.
It definitely is. So she's impressed all of these guys from this. Their business is called Dunn and Caldwell. That we learn that these guys that they've been out to eat with, that's the business that they're from.
Now we're back at Joe's. She's singing a baby song. Was it like, and if that mockingbird?
Maybe. I don't, yeah, one of those generic lullabies.
And she's singing that, and then like, creepy ass nanny just like walks in and throws Joe off her vibe, off her mom vibe. And Joe says there's nothing she wouldn't do for her baby.
Oh, Joe, you're a natural. Would you like some hot cocoa?
It's very Hand That Rocks the Cradle going on right now.
And Joe's like, oh, yes, that would be great. So Joe continues to sing to the baby, and that's when Emily sees her chance to make a covert phone call.
Yeah, she picks up the phone, pulls up the cord, the antenna, and she calls and says, I'm in.
Hi, it's Emily. I'm in.
What do you mean you're in? She agreed to hot cocoa.
Okay.
Like, was that the first, like, just get her to me, get her to say yeah on the cocoa.
No.
We know from experience, if she accepts hot cocoa from you, she trusts you.
She's calling whoever hired her to let them know that she's gotten access to Joe and the baby. And one thing that keeps popping up for me is that this Emily character continues to try to have an English accent, but it's very Australian to me.
It's like, it's Chris Marchette's sister.
Yes!
Hello, I'm in.
That's a great way to describe her. Yeah, that's
sometimes her, that's, he was British, other times he was Australian.
That's exactly who she reminds me of.
Oi, hello, I'm in. So now we're at Peter's bed that looks like a bouncy house.
What?
Like, look at this fucking back, this back wall of his bed. It looks like it's filled with air.
Okay.
It's really strange. But so they just got done doing it.
And of course he's just showering Amanda with compliments.
And he's like, oh, you made me look awesome.
You're
at dinner.
Amazing. You're amazing, Amanda.
You made me look awesome at dinner and a king afterwards.
And you know what? I hired Caitlin as the efficiency expert at D&D as a gift to you. And what's very troublesome to me is that you're not accepting the gift and it's making life harder for you. And Amanda's still very against Caitlin being there. And she's like, you know what? I can't believe you can't see the irony that you hire her to make my life easier. And what she's doing is making my life harder. So
right.
Why are we doing this again?
And it's a very big office. Does she have to operate at my desk? Like, that's very off-putting immediately.
Bruce's
too.
Office is open.
Yeah.
We don't have anybody in that
Why
office.
Why does everyone want to be in my office? Doesn't like, anyone know someone murdered themselves in it?
All the time. So he keeps trying to reassure her, saying, you know, Caitlin is the best in the country. She only had this time available. We're very lucky to have her. She's going to just take care of the things that you don't need to worry about so you can really focus on running D&D to the best of your ability.
And she's just like, yeah, okay. So Peter then goes and gets up to, like, take a pee. And then Amanda jumps up, tries to find that envelope that he got last night, pulls it out, and it's a check from Dunn & Caldwell Company for 25 G's.
Now, Dan, it took me a really long time to figure out that was a check.
Yeah.
I did not know what it was.
Like a COD.
It looked
money
weird.
Order.
It's like, yeah, a money I was order. Like, is that a money order? Is that like a receipt? I don't know what the hell it is.
It's a Dunn & Caldwell 25 grand. And then she has to put it back and jump right back into bed. So now all she knows is he got 25 grand for something.
So she asks him when he returns from the bathroom, hey, tell me a little bit about this research project that you're doing.
Yeah, that's when I blacked out.
So
she's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing something. It's going to be cool. Bye.
So, no, that's when Peter says, it's a heart drug, and he names it. I think it's called, like, Caladripil or something. I don't know what it's called.
Oh, but I have it written down. It's, shit, what is it called?
They reference it later in the episode. But he says, yeah, they're paying me for 2 years study. I could give them the answer in 2 minutes, not 2 years. And then that's when Amanda's like, well, isn't that not right? Okay, maybe I can do it in 5 minutes. But
Cardapril.
Cardapril. And then he says, it's their dime, not mine. And I give them over $10 million in hospital contracts a year. So it's really, they should be throwing me some kind of philanthropy my way.
Hmm. Okay.
So basically, I'm getting what I'm getting from this is that this is like an under the table transaction, kind of like a kickback for him sending them all of this business and hospital contracts. They're compensating him directly, and they're saying it's for a study that's not really happening.
Right. Now we cut back to Joe. She's taking photos of her unnamed baby in a bassinet, and Jake is holding up like photography equipment that like bounces the light off of you better, and she's shooting him like a model, like very quickly and like, yeah, I like that. You know, it's the same style of like.
And then we get to see those freeze frames of like, oh, yeah, great photo. And it's just terrible.
Yeah, still bad. And then this is where she tells Jake, like, oh, yeah, I'm moving to New York. And
this is a surprise because Jake is like, wait, what? When did you make this decision?
And I was waiting for them to slip up again and be like, I'm moving back to New York. Because apparently she's not from there anymore.
Well, that's where she came from. She was living in New York before.
Right. But they changed her high school to a place in L.A.
Well, it's very possible that she could have gone to, no, her high school's in the Bay Area.
Right.
That she could have grown up in the Bay Area, went to college in New York, met her husband there, lived the first couple years in her 20s there, and then moved to L.A. to get away.
I guess so. But she's moving to New York, and she wants to take the baby, and she's decided to name it Austin.
Aww, because that's where her parents went to college.
Doesn't make any sense.
Well, Jake thinks it's a great name and very meaningful.
I think it's terrible. It should still be Michael Jr. And then the nanny shows up with groceries, and Joe is immediately like, oh, nanny, let me take your picture, too. And the nanny's like, no, nope, nope, nope. I don't do pictures. No, please, no. I'll take one of you guys.
Yeah, so she evades the camera's lens, and she's able to take some photos of Jake, Joe, and the baby.
And this is our first, like, well, our second red flag of, oh, she doesn't want to be photographed. Because she's about to do some illegal shit.
Weird.
Now we go to D&D. Allison is back to work. And Amanda immediately is a bitch to her.
Right. So this goes back to your point earlier that just the previous episode, she makes a special trip to Twin Oaks where she tells her, you take all the time you need. Your job is secure at D&D. When you get back, we're gonna work it out.
Not anymore. She's like, I would have thought you'd come in early on your first day back. Looks like I was wrong. And she's like, D&D's a fucking war zone. Hope you have a goddamn helmet and grenades.
And I'm not here to hold your hand, Allison. So you've got to be on it. You're meeting me here tonight at 7. We're going to go over all of these files, familiarize yourself with all of these accounts.
It's double the work, and we have an efficiency expert now. And here's a stack of papers. Be here at 7.
Now, Allison is not able to meet her at 7 because she has an AA meeting at 7.
And a man, it cuts to a man and she gives off this smile like, oh, you're fucking pathetic.
I know.
Yeah.
So she asks if they can meet at 6 instead of 7. And I'm like, okay, where is your AA meeting? How long is the meeting with Amanda going to take? Because if you want to drive anywhere in L.A.,
it's going
to
be an hour.
It's going to be 30 to 45 minutes. Like, even if you're going 8 to 10 miles. So are you planning on meeting with Amanda for literally like 10 minutes? Because that's all you're going to be able to meet with her if you want to make a 7 o'clock appointment.
Yeah. Faux show. No good.
So Allison walks out of Amanda's office, feeling a little dejected. Billy senses that there's something wrong, so he's like, hey, you want to go out to lunch today? Allison says, oh no, let's just play it by ear.
No, she's down for lunch.
No, she says no.
Really?
She says, oh, Billy.
She's down for dinner.
Yes. So she says, let's play it by ear. Then Billy says, well, how about dinner tonight?
Szechuan from your favorite pagoda.
I don't even know what that means.
And, okay, so Allison's out of AA. There's no discussion about Susan or what happened there or what's going on.
It's absolutely over.
And it's just like, Billy wants to pick up where they left off.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that?
Billy is a man of opportunity. He sees one with Allison. She's sober. So it's the Allison that he likes. And he's gonna make a play for it. There's no one else in sight. So now we go to Amanda and the efficiency lady. Caitlin strolls into Amanda's office with a suit looking like a lingerie curtain. And Amanda immediately is like, you walk in here without knocking again, and you'll be fired so fast your head will spin.
Now, Caitlin is kind of showing a little bit of a softer side to Amanda here. And she says, well, Amanda, I actually came in to commend you. I've done a bit of looking into your staff, and you have a lot of great people surrounding you here. Especially Billy Campbell.
What the fuck?
Do you have eyes? Do you have ears? Billy? How is he the standout employee?
Billy's been there the least. He is the worst. And he was only brought in to fuck with Allison.
Yeah.
But apparently his work's amazing.
Caitlin is very impressed by him. So, and Amanda agrees. He is great. But what I need you to do, Caitlin, is fire Allison Parker.
She's an alcoholic account exec waiting to fall off the wagon. And I love this part.
Me too!
Caitlin's like, oh, well, actually, I'm an alcoholic. And the motto is, one day at a time, you fucker.
Yeah, so she's not hit to the jive of firing someone just based on the fact that they're an alcoholic. And Amanda apologizes immediately, but can sense that maybe she stepped on some toes and now she's making more of an enemy of Caitlin than she already had.
Mm-hmm. And she's just immediately like, okay, fuck, this is completely backfired.
And she's like, I can't fire Allison myself. Well, why not? You're her boss, aren't you?
Yeah.
She's back from AA.
Well, I guess she's still quote unquote seeking treatment because she's in AA. So maybe Allison can't fire her, but if they find that her job is no longer needed via efficiency, then that's a way to let her go.
Maybe that's the angle that they're taking.
We'll go with that.
Okay.
Now we go to AA. I didn't realize that Allison and Terry would be at the same AA meeting, but here we are.
Here we are.
And what's the chant that they do?
They like hold their hands and like, if you work it, it'll work, or something like that.
Not making fun of AA. If you're a recovering alcoholic, that's some good shit.
And I'm sure that that is true. If you do work it, it does work.
Yeah, that's right. And Terry and Allison, they start talking, and I immediately saw a boom mic in the fucking shot. Like dead center of the top center of the TV. There's a boom mic that was just hanging
there.
Well,
Terry is so freaking tall. They need to they have to get his head in the shot. And I'm sure no person's arms are that big enough to like get that mic all the way up there above his head.
I've never seen that ever on another TV show. Ever. I've never seen a boom mic.
Dan was really...
I couldn't believe it.
He was like, oh my God, there's a boom mic in the frame.
It's like terrible editing, you know?
They were like, we got this shot. We can't reshoot. We can't crop it. That's it.
Can't pay all those extras again. Terry's too fucking tall. So Terry's like, you know, I'm sorry I haven't returned your calls, Allison. I've been really busy with like football and shit.
No, he says you didn't give me your phone number and you didn't leave your return call number on my machine when you called me. So this is before the days of caller ID. So if she calls and leaves a message and doesn't leave a phone number, he can't get her back if she's not listed.
Right.
And that's what he says, and you're not listed. So
Allison's like, look, let's get some coffee. Then Terry's like, fuck that. You want to come back to my place to get Chinese? I promise I'll behave.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm not going to put the moves on you. I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I just can't deal with the public. Because remember, Terry Parsons is a big-time football player.
He's using being a sex addict as like something like alluring. You know? Like he parades it. He's like, yeah, come over to my place. We'll have Chinese. I'll be okay. It'll be hard for me, but I'll be all right.
But I promise I won't rape you.
Yes, I love to fuck. Love it. And I want to do it real bad with you, but I'll restrain myself. Like just saying that, just you know, think about that. Like there's this like pick, there's a pickup where you can like go up to somebody and be like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. I had a dream, you know, that me and you hooked up.
That's a pickup line?
Right. Because
no, I'm asking you.
I'm sure it's used.
Did you use it?
No, I've heard somebody use that shit. But you immediately
gauge how they're going to react to it.
Yeah, you gauge how they're going to react.
Like if they go, ew, then you're like, shit, they don't like me. Or if they go,
And they immediately have a mental picture of you having sex with them or them having sex with you. So like it's in their head, us having sex. And I feel like that's a Terry angle here of like, yeah, just come into my house. It'll be cool. I'll behave, but I might not, you know, like there's that. That's what's so like alluring about Terry is that he
is
could,
it alluring?
He could pounce at any moment, like he could break and just become this like sex crazed monster.
You know what? That's not alluring. That's freaking dangerous and scary. He is literally three times her size.
Have you seen Allison's latest gentleman callers? Freaking party girl, party boy.
Oh, God. Whatever happened to him, by the way?
With the Brillo pad hair.
What happened to him?
He fixed her car and ran away.
Okay. So we cut to the next scene where Michael is leaving the hospital. He's walking to his car in the dark. And this was a really long shot of him just fumbling for his keys, putting the keys in his car to open the door.
And a man is like, hey, Michael.
So Michael is scared. He's like, oh, wow. Like she surprised him. And he says,
Jesus Christ.
I never figured you for the dark alley type.
I would.
So Amanda says, I want to know about a research project Peter is working on. And Michael's like, okay, why are you coming to me for this? I get it. He's got some dirt on you. Now you want dirt on him. Okay, I can play this little game.
But what is it?
And she tries to be like, no, that is not true. I'm just interested in Peter's work. I want to know what he's working on. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Michael is not buying this. And he's like, okay, yeah, right. And he's just kind of giving her a hard time.
He says, any request from you has a built-in degree of difficulty. So if I'm going to risk my neck, I need to know what's going on.
Now, Amanda's like, look, I got your job back for you. You owe me, Michael.
And she wants to know about a study from the heart drug Cardapril. And Michael's like, all right, I'll see what I can do. I'll get the info. Now, Allison, we cut to Allison at Terry's place.
Now, if you'll remember, earlier that day, she made plans to have dinner with Billy. They were going to order in at Billy's place and watch a movie. But she completely stunned on him.
Yeah.
And she goes to Terry's house to watch a movie and have dinner with him.
She calls Billy. She's like, hey, yeah, can't make it. And Billy's like, I got food and I got the movie ordered. And Allison's like, I appreciate you going through all the trouble, but you know, I'm just going to hang out at the house.
Yeah, I've just got so much work. I just can't.
It's pretty fucked up, man.
Come here and work from my place. No, I'll just be distracted. I really just need to get this work done.
And Billy pulls, like, the disapproving dad move and just, like, goes silent on the phone for a little bit. And there's no silence. And he's just like, okay, see you later.
Well, see you tomorrow.
And they hang up. Then Terry, he brings over popcorn, and he's like, all right, what movie do you want to watch? And then they immediately start hooking up.
Oh, yeah. They didn't even watch the movie. They just...
This is high school.
Their own, yeah.
This is high school, want to come watch a movie. And you never watch the movie.
Now, it's the next day. Billy is leaving for work, and he runs into Amanda in the courtyard of Melrose Place. I thought that he was going to run into Allison during the walk of shame.
Oh.
But nope, we don't get that moment here.
They just want to talk shit about Caitlin Mills.
Well, that's all Amanda wants to do. Anybody who wants to listen, she wants to bitch about how Caitlin is ruining her life. And she acknowledges that Caitlin has taken a shine to Billy. And it seems like she really, for whatever reason, likes Billy, and Amanda wants Billy to ask her out to dinner and then get the dirt. See what she's really going for. See what she's after and try to get to the bottom of this whole efficiency expert crap.
Mm-hmm. And Billy's basically like, that's not my job, man.
This is beyond the call of duty. And I'd have to agree. I'd be like, no, I'm not like being a spy and covertly taking out somebody to pump them for information. That's weird.
Yeah, it's definitely above and beyond the call of duty, but I guess he's going to do it. Now we're at Terry's place. And Allison and Terry have done it.
Yeah, They're naked. They're laying in Terry's bed. They wake up and they're saying their good mornings. And Allison even says, oh my gosh, I've been up half the night because I was thinking, you're a sex addict. So did you just fall off the wagon by having sex with me last night?
And Terry's like, no, this is special.
I really care about you.
I am going to fall off the wagon having sex with you repeatedly for the next 3 hours.
So,
but Terry's got practice.
Yeah, he's got to go, but he does invite Allison to come to his, I guess it's like an interview that he's doing.
Yeah,
that
it's like
evening.
A presser.
Yeah.
It's like a presser. And Terry pops up and he does the no underwear for the pants. He just throws on pants.
Oh, I didn't even.
And goes commando.
I did not see that.
Gross. Just gross.
So they make plans to meet at Sunset Boulevard at the particular studios at 7 p.m., which could be an AA meeting conflict.
Maybe. Now we're at Wilshire Memorial. Michael is snooping around and opens one file cabinet, pulls out one folder, and immediately finds that funding was denied for Cardapril.
Well, what I thought, too, is that there's this whole little room dedicated to medical research, mm-hmm. and there's only, like, two filing cabinets in there. And like you said, yeah. He just goes right to the correct one within a matter of under a minute.
Bingo.
And then the next move he makes is a phone call to Dunn and Caldwell to follow up on the check that he thinks is being sent to Peter Byrne.
So Cardapril has been, the funding's been denied since May of 93.
Ooh.
So why is Peter still receiving money for it? And Michael is like, you sneaky little bastard. So Michael gets on the phone. He calls. This is where it's all confusing, like the fucking Palmer Woodward shit. But he's like, I want to be connected to the Dunn Caldwell Company. So he pretends to be Peter's assistant calling about his last check. And they're like, oh, yeah, we sent that check. Did you get it? And he's like, oh, yep. I just wanted to thank you guys for being so prompt. And then he shuts the file, hangs up the phone, and goes, gotcha. So I guess he's got him.
Yeah, he's got all the info he needs.
He knows that Peter received money for
Cardapril that hasn't been approved and was discontinued over a year ago.
Right. Now let's head to D&D. Billy rolls up to work and asks about the meeting.
And Allison says that it was very supportive and reassuring. So he also says, well, I came to your house last night and I knocked on the door and Stalker. The lights weren't on and you weren't there. And you said you're going to be up all night. And she was like, yeah,
he's so inquisitive.
I got my work done and I was exhausted. So I just decided to go to sleep.
Well, that's not true because I had a flashlight and then I got into your ducts after I learned about the Ramsey fella who was creeping around the place. Then I drilled holes in your walls. And then I looked for him, and then it was jerked off in your bathroom. Like, get away, Billy. Fucking leave me alone. You dated my best friend. You moved in with her.
Yeah, like, it's kind of that ship has sailed kind of a thing. And
bounce.
Get out of here. But, okay. Now, you know what, Dan? I made a mistake. Hmm. This is when he says, let's do lunch.
Yeah.
And she goes, let's play it by ear.
And he's like, okay, I'll keep my lunch plans open. Like,
if someone,
play it by ear means no.
Yeah, if someone tells you, let's play it by ear, that's like a polite way of being like, no.
No, I'm good. And he's like, all right, I'll just make sure my lunch is random. And now Peter is working on his golf swing and almost hits Michael in the face as he comes into the office.
A lot of working on his golf swing in his office.
Yeah. And Peter says, oh God, why don't you make an appointment like the rest of the little people? I'm busy.
Busy working on my swing.
Working on my golf swing.
Now, Michael has some dirt on Peter, and he's not going to go into the cold night like that. And he says, no, actually, Peter, I need to talk to you about something, and you're going to listen. You're going to listen good.
He just starts reciting Carterpill jargon and exposes Peter for receiving money from Dunn and Caldwell. And Michael now owns Peter. And he's like, oh, yeah, I've got surgery in about 10 minutes, and Peter's like, no, I have surgery in 15 minutes. And he's like, I don't think so.
Yeah, so Michael.
And I like your pen, so I'm going to take your pen.
Yeah, Michael's taking over his surgery. He's taking his pen, but I will say Peter does not admit any fault here. He plays it off like, yeah, everything's fine. I don't know why you're coming in doing this and trying to bribe me and hold something over my head. Mm-hmm. This is not cool. So it's kind of open-ended.
Yeah. But Michael, he leaves the scene. He's like, we really should go. The OR hates it when you're late. As a little like, come on, let's go, boss.
Yeah.
So now we're at Terry's, the end of Terry's press conference, and he's swarmed by like 10 extras.
So many beautiful young girls just want to touch him or get his autograph or have some kind of interaction with Terry Parsons.
But the camera here was terrible at like creating a crowd because you can see the end of the crowd.
Yeah, it's just like
just 10 people.
It's 10 people around one person. So, but and those 10 people are really clamoring to try to get to him.
Yeah, it's like hot 90s women like giving their phone numbers to Terry, and Allison's sort of a fly on the wall like, "Oh, wow, Terry's very very coveted."
And Terry sees Allison and he's very happy that she's there, runs over to her and is like, Allison, wait, thanks so much for coming. So they are united and they go off together.
Yep. Now Billy and Caitlin are on their little
fact-finding mission.
Probe dinner.
Yeah, so Caitlin, of course, takes the reins. She orders for both of them, which Billy can kind of finds like he isn't appreciating too much. And then that's when Caitlin...
I order my food. I wanted peanut butter and jelly, no crust.
And that's when Caitlin just cuts to the chase. And she says, Billy, I know you didn't ask me here as a friendly dinner. I know Amanda put you up to this.
She's always got the jump on Amanda.
She does. Maybe because one day she was Amanda.
Maybe, yeah. And basically, Caitlin tells Billy, every single person is getting fired except Billy.
So if that's the future of D&D, he's the only
valuable D&D employee.
I don't want to be a D&D.
Fuck no. Caitlin, but then Caitlin's like, but you know, since you're going to be on, I'll grant you one wish. Anyone's butt you want to save?
So you can save one person, and she orders that he has to come up with all the performance reviews of all of the employees by midday tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And then when she asks him any butts to save, I can only assume it went to like a commercial break.
Yeah, and we don't know what butt he wanted to save.
He never answers.
Will it be Allison? Will it be Amanda? Will it be nobody? We don't know.
Yeah. So now we go to Joe. She's about to fire her nanny, Emily, after 2 days because she's moving to New York. And in lieu of this, she offers a nanny coming off being a nanny for Lord and Lady
Cullings,
a week's extra pay.
And it's like she worked for you for 2 days.
And Emily's like, where are you going? Can I write you?
Don't you leave. I'll miss you terribly.
Can I call you, please? How are you getting anywhere? Can I give you a ride?
Where are you going? And, you know, that's where Joe doesn't divulge anything. She just says, we have to leave. I'm taking the baby. I have my bags packed. And somehow Emily does talk Joe into agreeing to let her drive her to the airport.
So I guess Joe's month to month on that lease.
And what's up with all that furniture?
Because you can just roll whenever you want at Melrose.
And all your belongings, it's everything you can't fit in a suitcase that's going to go with you on an airplane. Just done.
She's done.
Whatevs.
I'm out. So Joe, she agrees that Emily can
drive her to the airport.
And then Emily's like, you should go to bed early. And Joe's like, yeah, you're right. You have a
big day tomorrow.
And then she picks up fucking Michael Jr.
And she says, don't worry, Austin. Your real mommy will give you a new nice name.
Ooh. Now we go to the rare scene of Mancini Designs. Jane and Allison are chatting it up. And Allison doesn't know if she could have done it without Terry. And here's what she says about Terry. Terry made the dark accessible. He made it safe to be there. He made the dark accessible.
Because Terry created a whole new darkness called rape that's just looming over my head at all times.
It's like, I feel like there was the meetings at Twin Oaks, and then like Terry would like waterboard everybody.
Terry was doing like MK Ultra treatments.
He's just fucking hurting people. Sleep deprivation. It's like, oh fuck, Terry's in here tonight.
Get her in the water tank.
Waterboarding. Where are you? Do you still want a drink? No, Terry. Like, he made the dark accessible.
Right, so
he made it safe to be there. To just hang out in the darkness. This is how Batman talks. Like, the Dark Knight. Like, Bane in Batman, in the last Batman, Dark Knight Rises. He's like, I was born in the darkness. You merely adopted it.
So is Terry...
He's Bane.
Terry Bane.
Terry is Bane. Does
Terry become Bane?
He is Bane. He was born in the darkness. And he made it safe to be there. So, and like Jane's like, I got nothing. You know I can't give you any dude advice.
Well, she does acknowledge that maybe she's not the best person to be doling out romantic advice. But she does say, you know, Allison, he is a celebrity. Different rules apply. Be careful with him and don't go too fast too soon.
And Allison's like, oh, but Jane, I have more in common with Terry than any other man.
What? What are you talking about? Anytime Allison gets into a new relationship, it's like that new person trumps anybody else she's ever met in her life.
How does she have more in common?
I think she said that Terry. About like the party guy too. That they have more in common than yeah. anybody else.
She said she loved him. And then he passed out at the cabin. I love you too, babe. Oh, man.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, Jane urges Allison to watch out. And
we're now to Wilshire Memorial.
The walls at Mancini Designs are made of particle board. They're wait, not finished. What? They are not finished.
Well, maybe that's where the $50,000 loan was going to go into. Maybe.
Unfinished walls. We're at the break room of Wilshire Memorial, and we finally see Kimberly.
A rare appearance.
Last time we saw Kimberly, she was mid-suicide attempt.
Yeah, like, she was not doing so good.
And she's with Michael in the break room. She's like, if you think I'm going to forget about this baby thing, you're crazy.
Yeah, so that's really all we have to go on. And then that's when Michael divulges his little plan that he is going to become Peter Burns' assistant.
Well, great. He hates you, so that's not going
to
work.
Well, not anymore. I have some dirt on him, and he's going to have to keep me around if he wants me to keep my mouth shut.
And yeah, that's it.
One thing I noticed, did you see the stickers on Michael's locker?
No.
He has one, like, he's got a lot of stickers, but one that stood out to me was just one that had the word golf with an exclamation point.
Golf!
And there was a lot of other crazy stuff that I'm sure if we freeze framed it, we could really delve into what kind of stuff Michael wants to put on his locker.
He loves that golf. But he makes a call to Amanda and he basically lies to her. He's just like, yep, that grant is good. It's on the up and up and that project is very important.
Yeah, everything checks out. If Burns keeps doing studies like these, he's going to be a very famous man. Which can be taken in both ways.
And Amanda's just like, God damn it.
Yeah, so, she's pretty disappointed. She thought she had some dirt, but now this is kind of like everything is good with him.
So Michael's basically hijacked her dirt. And I mean, back to Kimberly, though, I hate how there's just this loose end of like, so what happened after Michael prohibited you from trying to kill yourself in the ocean?
Well, she got her vindication by calling the Carters and telling them that the baby survived.
But she, I feel like she would stop at nothing to have a baby.
Well, Kimberly runs on vengeance, and that baby plan didn't work out, so now they have to go to the next baby plan, I guess.
I guess you're right. So Billy rolls up to Amanda's office with the performance reports. And he's like, oh, Amanda, I've got the performance reports and I got to give them over to Caitlin in like 3.5 minutes.
Now, Caitlin did make a point to tell Billy at dinner, yes, this is a loyalty test. Mm-hmm. So basically she was telling him, you cannot share this information with anybody. You get those performance reviews together and you give them to me and me only. Now we see Billy now completely
going against
that request.
Yep. And Amanda starts reading the performance reports. She's like, I'm not going to have people under me writing bad things about me.
My secretary says that I'm mean and that I often take credit for her work. I'm going to make some creative edits on these.
And her creative edits are just throwing the documents into a shredder.
Just shredding the pages. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then so Billy's like, I got to get these reports over to her. I'm screwed if this doesn't get back to her. And we cut away. Back to Peter's place.
Now, okay, this freaking scene is so gross.
I don't even want to talk about it.
Okay.
Why was his jean unbuttoned?
Oh, my God. Peter comes into the frame, and we're at his house. He comes over. He's got his jeans are, like, halfway unbuttoned. He's not wearing a shirt.
No, he's fully zippered, but just the button is undone.
Okay, the button's undone.
Like, did you just eat a lot? Is that it?
And I don't think, like, Peter has got, like, a hot bod to be, like, walking around, like,
and just
hey.
One button undone?
Now, he's talking to somebody off screen.
He looks like Huckleberry Finn. Like, I would imagine the jeans.
They're, like, high waters.
They're, like, rolled up to, like, capri
I level. Just came back from the crick.
Yeah, and he's always wearing suspenders. Just put a little tumbleweed in his mouth and call it a day.
Now, he's talking to somebody off screen and showering them with compliments. Oh, you've pulled off some real coups over the years, but this one was brilliant. You're just the most beautiful, wonderful person ever. And we assume, of course, he's talking to Amanda.
Nope.
The camera cuts over to the person he's talking to, and it's Caitlin, the would-be efficiency expert brought in to make sure D&D is running smoothly.
And he's, like, making out with her, and he's like, you should be the one to tell Amanda she's fired.
Now, this is not before they both acknowledge that, oh, efficiency expert was so clever, so apparently, Caitlin is not an efficiency expert. She is just an old flame from Chicago that Peter seems to love over Amanda. And now that she's in town in LA, he is choosing Caitlin over Amanda. But why bring her in? Why make Amanda's life hell? Why do this?
Yeah.
What's the motivation? I just don't understand.
I don't know.
They just
And is this Peter's place or is it Caitlin's place?
That's what I don't understand.
Because Billy shows up to give these performance reports.
Right. So I was like, why is Billy going to Peter's place?
It'd make more sense if he's going to Caitlin's.
It's probably Caitlin's place.
But he has the reports in hand, and he sees Peter hooking up with Caitlin.
Yeah. And let me just say, too, they're like hatching this evil scheme and getting off on everything. And then Peter says, first Amanda, then Michael Mancini, and then maybe a third world country. It's like, what?
You're going to fire a third world country?
Like, why? I don't even understand, like, why taking these people down is like such a huge accomplishment.
Three weaknesses, Jenny. They live by them. They live and die by the three weaknesses. So now Joe is packing up the car, Emily's car. And Emily brings down the stroller with the baby. And Joe, she's got Austin all wrapped up and then puts him in a car seat and completely wrong. There's so many blankets over that kid. And she just clips him in to the seat.
Well, this is 95. There are a lot. You get
an accident, and that baby's going to just fucking slip out of the blankets.
Not and to mention go it's sailing. Front facing.
Like, yeah.
It should be rear facing. But that's all newer.
Not a good idea. And then she just shuts the door. She shuts the door, and Emily's like in the front seat already.
Right. So Emily gets in the driver's seat. We have Joe buckling the baby into the car seat in the back seat. So presumably, after she secured the baby, she would then get into the passenger seat. So then Emily could drive both her and the baby to the airport.
Yeah.
However, once she shuts the back door to then make her way to the passenger door, that's when Emily sees her opportunity.
And she says, say goodbye to mommy.
And then, pedal to the metal, and she screeches off into the night.
Dude, Joe just shouldn't have a baby.
Why?
How many times is someone going to take your fucking baby from you? Set her baby taken, like, three times.
Three times. One in utero, one by Kimberly, and now by Emily.
And in court.
Yeah, in utero.
Oh.
That's what I meant.
It's like, come on, man. You gotta watch your kid better.
Well, you brought up a good point. You were like, why did she need a nanny? She said that as soon as she got the baby back, she made the decision to move to New York. So if she knew she was moving to New York, why did she hire somebody?
Yeah. You don't need a nanny. You needed Jake to babysit.
You needed Jake to just hang out and help you pack.
Yeah. That's it. So that's the credits. Joe is just running up the street like, no, I've lost my baby again.
And what kind of recourse does she have? She can't go to the police.
There's no recourse. You're fucked. You're just totally screwed.
So to recap this episode,
Joe hires Emily.
Allison and Terry start dating once they're released from rehab.
Peter hires Caitlin Mills, who is set on firing everyone.
Peter is also involved in some below board business dealings.
Michael finds out about those business dealings.
Peter and Caitlin are conspiring to take down Amanda together, and they're actually a couple.
Allison blows off Billy for Terry.
And then Billy sees Caitlin and Peter together.
And Joe gets her baby stolen again. Ugh.
Yuck. 90s moments.
The rollerblader and then Danny Tanner at the beginning.
Allison's leather bomber jacket.
Terry gives Allison his home phone number on a piece of paper.
Matt wearing that like bowling style shirt to the welcome home Allison party.
Mm-hmm. Allison's luggage, no wheels, just the bags.
Paper towel brand was Lucky's. Remember, Dan, there used to be a Lucky's grocery store when we first moved to LA?
Mm-hmm.
And then it got completely like taken over and there's no more Lucky's anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the same Lucky's brand from that grocery store. So maybe back in the 90s, it was like the grocery store.
That was
to go
the
to.
Spot. Joe's cordless ass phone with the long antenna.
The idea that you could not be listed somewhere, that like, I think everybody now is like that. That was such an anomaly back then. Like, you're not listed, but now it's like, nobody wants to be listed. Nobody wants to be found by telemarketers or people that are just going to blow your phone up all day trying to like robot sell you stuff.
Yeah, we hate them. Terry's jean shirt on jean jacket.
Jean on jean.
Double jean.
Turning off your answering machine. Having the ability to just be like, I'm turning it off.
Yep.
Asking for an autograph.
That's not 90s. People still do that.
No, Dan. Now it's all about selfies. No one is going to go up to a celebrity and say, can I get your autograph? It's, can I take a selfie with you? No one's doing autographs.
I've got to disagree wholeheartedly with you on this. Athletes, you still get autographs. On memorabilia, on merchandise, on things. Yeah, that's a thing. For a sports athlete, yes. Emily's car.
Jane's colored nylons.
Cool.
Good stuff.
Great 90s moments there. All these episodes deep down have a lesson that we can take away and apply to our regular adult lives. Jenny, what's your lesson?
Don't hire a random wannabe Mary Poppins nanny without really properly checking out her background and references.
But Jenny, she could pick up a baby and stop its crying.
She nannied for the Collings.
Yeah.
And you know, Joe does say your references are great. Yeah, anybody could like put anything as a reference on a resume.
There you go. This is on my hand.
Wow, you nannied for the Queen of England? That's crazy.
Lord and Lady.
Prince Harry and the other one, Charles. Wow. Or no. What's the other one's name? William.
I don't know.
Okay, so why didn't you follow up on the references? Why didn't you call anybody there? It's just, I know this was the 90s. It was UK. A different time.
You had to call England. But
honestly, you're entrusting the safety of your baby to somebody. You need to do a little bit of follow-up.
She's going based on appearance and voice.
Well, I'm saying don't do that. Dan, what do you take from this?
My lesson is, if you've had your baby lost or stolen more than once, don't let your baby out of your goddamn sight.
Ever.
Sit in the back with him. You know, don't hire a nanny. If you want to fly under the radar, don't have another person there that you don't know 100%.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, like keep that baby in your arms next to you every waking fucking moment. That's what you do. Don't just put him in a car, strap him in, and then be like, loo-doo-doo, stroll over to the front seat, and then he's gone. Jesus Christ, Joe.
Now it's time for
Bitch of the Week!
I'm a boss-ass bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss-ass
All right. bitch, bitch, bitch. So last week, I said that Past Palmer from the Christmas Carol was the bitch. And Jenny, you said that Matt was the bitch of the week.
And not a lot of people agreed with me.
No.
Nope.
With a vote of 12-4, I win. Palmer, Past Palmer, the memory of Palmer is a bitch. For having sex with that prostitute who rubbed your stomach too much.
All right, well, let's see what you guys said. Alyssa, she says, I don't know. I agree with Jenny Hill. Nobody takes away my Christmas dinner, right? So my non-existent vote is for Terry. I don't think either of the two options were this week were bitches. Okay.
Jerry says, I'm going with Dan Hill on this one. I vote for Palmer Woodward as bitch of the week for sure. Leaving your child behind on Christmas to be with your prostitute on Christmas, of all days, is a bitch of a thing to do. What the hell is wrong with you, Palmer? That is a man who did not deserve to be a father. If he is choosing some weird-looking, raunchy prostitute over his own child, Palmer, you are the biggest bitch ever. So Dan gets my vote this week. Palmer Woodward, bitch of the week in my book, for sure. And by the way, Dan and Jenny, the original Christmas song here heard at the beginning of this episode is the song, It's Oh Baby, It's Christmas All Over Again by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And the original Christmas song heard in the scene where Michael tells Kimberly she has to work on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day is the song Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Mm.
And the original Christmas song heard in the scene where Terry takes the plate of food out of Allison's hand and tells her he needs to talk to her and tells her he loves her is the Christmas song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Just a little information. Dan and Jenny, I thought you would both like to know. And we would. Thank you so much for
Thank
that.
You. Donald says, no, Jenny, it's not weird at all. I am so happy that you nominated Matt for Bitch of the Week. If you didn't or Dan didn't, I was going to recommend him as Bitch of the Week because I just felt that he was the one that deserved it in this episode from the standpoint of a gay man. If I met someone like Jeffrey, if he was in the military, I would not force him to come out even if he wasn't in the military. I wouldn't force him to come out. It's often betrayed on television and the movies where there's an out guy, an out and proud guy, and then there's a guy who's not out, and the out and proud guy forces the guy to come out with disastrous results. And I absolutely hate that. And then, say, the guy like Jeffrey comes back a couple of months later and tells me that he has AIDS, I would need a little time to do some research to make sure I was healthy and know all the risks before I wouldn't turn away from him And if he showered me with presents and got us 2 tickets to go on a cruise to the Bahamas, not from a selfish standpoint, but from he's my boyfriend standpoint, I would not refuse because in my opinion, look at Jeffrey in that scene. He's so happy to give Matt these presents. And I don't think it's like the present itself, but it's the thought behind it that makes the person happy. And I think that is what Christmas is all about. I also believe that Jeffrey's breaking up with Matt is valid in the last scene since they have together. That is so fresh in my mind where Jeffrey is like, I can't do this. I need to focus on myself. And Matt says, we'll be friends and I'll support you. And he says, I don't want your limited support or your limited friendship. I think I know what he meant by that. I think what he was trying to say is that I wish what they would have wrote. It was like, I don't know what's going to happen to me tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen to me in a week. No AIDS patient is the same. I don't want to end up like all of those guys that we saw the other day wishing that I had done something with my life. Well, I still could. I want to go on with my life if I still had the chance because I know how this disease is going to affect me. And I can't be worrying about how this is affecting you and I don't have time for that. And I want to go on adventures and live my life. And since you don't want to do that, Matt, you're done.
Damn, Donald.
You're done. Let me tell you something. If you love somebody, you will go on any adventure they want. If he is dying from AIDS and he wants to live his life, you better bet if I met a guy like Jeffrey, I would be on that cruise, riding the wind, having the time of my life. So I can tell the story later on. Unfortunately, I haven't met a guy like Jeffrey. Mostly guys send me pictures of their private area. Yikes. But someday my prince will come. He will. He will, Donald. But anyway, that's my opinion. Yeah, and don't like those guys just sending dick pics. Yuck. Like stuff when they're wanted and warranted. Okay, fun. But if it's just randos, okay, stop with the dick pics. But anyway, that's my opinion of why Matt is the bitch of the week for what it's worth. Sorry, this is so long. I can't wait for the next episode, guys. Oh, thank you, Donald. I totally agree with you. If somebody is at the end of their life, they're having like a come to Jesus moment that maybe my life isn't going to be how I anticipated it. Let's have fun while we're still here. Freaking have fun. Have fun with that person.
Mindy said, oh my God, I've been binging the shit out of your podcast.
Oh, thanks, Mindy.
And I'm finally caught up so I can vote on Bitch of the Week. Woo! For my very first vote, I gotta go with Dan. Very good, Mindy. You're voting for the right person on your first vote. Past Palmer was a big part of why Amanda is the uber bitch she is today. Past Palmer can suck it. He's definitely the bitch of the week. Well done, Mindy. You, for never voting before, you know how to do it.
Kevin, he says, I'm going to stick with Jenny on this one and go with Matt. Yay! It's funny. I never thought Matt was a jerk until I started listening to this podcast and rewatching the episodes, right? When I think back about this too, I think the same thing. But he is such a jerk. From the swim dissing Rhonda to yelling that at the kid.
Come on, abuelo. Tell me what the hell you mean.
Yelling at the kid in the halfway.
I'll kill you, man.
I can't even get through this because it just makes me laugh so bad. In the halfway house, his only 2 stories that year, to being an ass to Katya and now Jeffrey. Why didn't he just accept?
Yeah, why don't just fucking say thanks for the bread maker, you dick. Thank you for the panini press.
Why didn't he just accept the presents? Matt hates gifts like Jake hates money. He messed things up with Jeffrey big time, but it's okay. Matt will be cursed with terrible relationships for the remainder of the series, just like all the other characters. But hey, at least he's finally getting a storyline. Very true, Kevin.
Matt's a dick. All right, Heatherina says, Matt gets my vote for Bitch of the Week. Matt, the social worker, has no concept of the feelings of other people.
So well said, Heatherina.
He chooses to date someone who is HIV positive and yet doesn't comprehend that Jeffrey wants to live his life to the fullest while he can. He also did a shitty thing by taking Jeffrey to a group home for people who are dying of AIDS. I know that Jeffrey said he wasn't affected by it, but he clearly was, as we later saw. And to be honest, how could you not be? Plus, Matt turns down a perfectly good cruise, a perfectly free first-class cruise. Then he has the nerve to override a physician order? He has no authority, none. He said, and I quote, "I'm aware of the patient's condition, but he's not to be moved." If the doctor has a problem with this, have him call me? Excuse me? That is not your call, Matt, Mr. Social Worker, Mr. Change Lab Results, Mr. Sticking Your Nose in Other People's Business, Butts.
Oh my gosh, Heatherina, that was perfect. It's so true.
Mindy responded to that, "Worst social worker ever."
I mean, it's weird because you really want to love Matt. You want to love him. But at every turn, he does like really crappy things.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Nikki says, "Do you think Woodward's hooker was a Care Bear trying to do the Care Bear stare for Mandy on Christmas?"
Or rubbing her tummy.
Nikki, that is hilarious. Yeah, I do think that that's what's going on.
So that is the results of last week's Bitch of the Week. This week, there could have been a few bitches. Peter. Who else?
There's so many. All of them.
Terry. Amanda.
Billy.
Billy could have been a bitch. Who? I get to go first, right?
Yeah, you're the winner.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go with Caitlin. Was that who you had? Caitlin is my bitch of the week. You know what you're doing. When you show up to somebody's work office and you're on their phone and you're on their computer and you're like, you are in there just to like see if they're doing work, like you know you're being a bitch. You know you're being a bitch. Then on top of that, you are hooking up with the person's boyfriend whose desk you're using. That's very, very bitchy. Very, very bitchy. And that's it.
Okay. Good nomination.
Caitlin was the bitch.
I'm going with Mary Poppins ripoff, Emily Baldwin for Bitch of the Week.
Guest star versus guest star.
Okay, so first off, you have this freaking fake-ass English accent. I swear I'm going with this she's related to Chris Marchette thing because I love that angle. And the fact that she's just ripping off Mary Poppins. Jo is a smart lady. I cannot believe she does not see through this. So, of course, the whole time she gains Jo's trust, she handles her baby just to steal it. This is a woman who is willing to steal a child. That is the most horrible thing you can do to anybody. And I think gaining somebody's trust and making them, you know, feel comfortable around you to let you care for their child, and then you just speed away. Plus, do you even know if that baby was strapped into the car seat correctly? No, you're just going speed of light down the street. So I think that clear cut, it's Emily, bitch of the week.
All right. You guys know how to vote. Get into our Facebook group by going to the link in our show notes, request to join, and then vote there. And you can vote on our Twitter, at Melrose Pod. So with that out of the way, it's time to rename this mofo. Last week, people liked my rename the best.
It was pretty good. I'm going to give it to you, Dan. Bitchmas.
Bitchmas Carol.
That was great.
Versus, what was it?
The Bruce Truce.
The Bruce Truce.
The Spruce Bruce Truce.
God help me. So what do you got this week?
Well,
what do you rename? This thing was called Bye Bye Baby.
Well, this rename this week isn't that much better than last week for me. As a nod to our Mary Poppins friend, I'm naming this Super Cala Alcoholic Efficiency Expert Alidocious.
Ooh. Very creative.
Thank you.
I like that. Mine is deceptive behavior on all fronts. Peter, Caitlin, Amanda, Michael, Emily, all deceptive.
Yes. Yep. I think that you could rename every episode deceptive behavior.
That doesn't sell DVDs.
Okay, so predictions.
I think Billy's going to hook up with Caitlin.
Really?
Yeah, he's the only employee that's going to be left. So they got to hook up. I think Allison, and that'll play into Peter hating Billy more. He's already nervous of him with Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
I think Allison and Terry are going to have to break it off. Because he's going to have all these chicks and never be around. Football season starting, you know. That'll be his exit. I think Jake tries to rescue Austin. That'll be a big thing. Hey, where is he? He'll like burst into some doors next week. And I think Amanda is going to be fired.
Hmm.
How could she get out of that?
Well,
Caitlin hates her. And Peter wants it done, and Peter's her boss.
My prediction is I think that Billy is going to thwart their plans that Peter and Caitlin have. So I think by him seeing them together, he's going to go to Amanda, tell her everything. And then Amanda's going to find some loophole to get Peter off of the board. And I think that somehow, some way, she's going to figure it out where she gets Caitlin and Peter out. She's done with Peter for good and kind of tips it on its head. So I think that's what's going to happen there. I think that Allison is still going to try to keep the possibilities open with Billy while she's still trying to figure out what's going on with Terry. However, I think Billy is going to see on like a tabloid or like on a news show that Allison is spending time with Terry because there's all of these like groupies and paparazzi and people wanting to get pictures of Terry and Allison. So I think that that's going to cause a big rift in the Allison-Billy world. I think it's pretty evident that the nanny was hired by the Carters, but wouldn't it be cool if she was hired by Chris Marchette?
That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be crazy? And then that was like the big FU to Jane as an exit, or that was the plan all along, that they were going to try to steal the baby and the $500,000. I don't know. I just thought that could be a funny thing of how that could play out.
That would be cool. So that is the episode, guys. If you want, like I said before, hit the link in our show notes to our Facebook group. Get in there and join it. A lot of cool stuff happening there. Somebody posted a link on eBay to these Melrose Place cookie cutters that they cut out like the Melrose Place logo like perfectly. Somebody wrote, it was Laura Layton's birthday last week. Happy birthday, Laura Layton. And then Zach wrote, didn't Billy's mom move to Montana with the sister after the dad's funeral? That's why he was at the airport last season, but couldn't get a last minute flight. It's hard to remember Billy continuity because it's all so irrelevant, but I think that's right.
I mean, that would make a lot of sense when she's like, oh, didn't you go home for the holidays? Because if he was going home and it was the Valley, that wouldn't make sense. But if it's Montana, makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, then you can't go home. Eric posted, where are the mourners? I see no mourners here. And I replied, I no longer have friends or family. I have mourners only. And then somebody, Anna wrote, Mandy, 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 to acquire mourners, You must first yourself be a mourner.
Oh, man.
Gotta have your mourners. Thanks, guys, for bearing with us during this busy time in our lives. There'll be probably a couple more weeks here of, like, random episode drops, but hopefully sooner than later we get back to Tuesdays being the day.
Yeah.
But until then, we're just going to spit them out when we can.
Thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for all of your support. Thank you to all our patrons.
Yeah.
If you want to support the show, you can become a patron for as little as $1 a month.
Yep.
Every bit helps us.
Patreon.com/MelrosePod.
Well, guys, we love smut.
And we love you.